Welcome to the Dead Pixel Society podcast, the photo imaging industry's leading news source. Here's your host, Gary Peugeot.
The Dead Pixel Society podcast is brought to you by Media Clip, Advertech Printing, and IP Labs.
Hello again and welcome to the Dead Pixel Society podcast. I'm your host, Gary Peugeot, and today we're joined by Adrian Knight, who is a buyer and seller of many, many companies. And today he's going to talk to us about the process of buying companies. Hi, Adrian. How are you today?
I'm very well. Thank you, Gary. It's a real honor to be here. Thank you for having me.
So obviously you're in the UK. Can you talk a little bit about how you got started in the business acquisition business, how you kind of started? Because you didn't start with much.
I certainly didn't. The short story of it is that I am a terrible startup entrepreneur. I had
How bad were you?
Well, 12 failed startups. So I've got 12 failures under my belt, which is as a badge of honor. And it was when I found out that I was expecting my daughter, Evie, that was when I knew something had to change, because I was working every hour under the sun. I was giving it everything, but I just didn't seem to be moving forward, and I wasn't making any money. I didn't have any money. It just wasn't a very good place. But when you discover that you're going to be a dad for the first time, it obviously changes priorities in a very big way. And I'd always liked the idea of buying an established business, because I felt that would get me past the startup bit, which I was clearly very terrible at. So I spent a bit of time sort of understanding, right, how does this work? And I basically just went for it. I just completely went for it. And within 3 months, I acquired my first company, which was a 30-year-old management consultancy here in the UK. And I didn't have any money, so I had no choice but to structure the deal in a way in which I didn't have to put any money down. So I ended up buying that business for £1, and I exited that last year for a very healthy six-figure sum. And I've gone on since then to acquire multiple businesses over the last sort of 4 years or so.
So when you structure a deal for £1, I would think you're probably not getting much out of it, right? So because you're probably financing it as you go out of cash flow, correct? So what was your thought process there? Was this just to get the ball rolling, to kind of get you started on that path? Or was there something specific on this business that you thought, wow, this is my future?
I mean, the business itself, I really liked. It was actually a business, ironically, that specialized in preparing businesses for sale and then exiting them. Mm-hmm. And so I saw it as a way to have, like, complete the loop. Mm-hmm. Learn how to buy a business and then learn how to build value and then sell them. I'm like, oh, this is interesting. But I've always, like, with that one, so I was taking a salary from that from day one. The key to buying businesses, certainly at the small business level, is you kind of got to forget the finances at the beginning of the conversation, and you need to understand what are the motivations. Like, why is the owner of this business looking to sell? And very often they are for non-financial reasons. So the owner of this business, I'd known him for about 18 months. He knew that I was essentially a safe pair of hands, that I was moral, ethical, and would do the business well. This was his life's work. He'd spent 30 years building this. He also had other companies which were arguably more successful. He just wanted to make sure that this was going to go to a safe home and would be looked after. So we both got a good deal out of it, really. But I was in a position where I could start sort of earning an income from that from day one. Don't get me wrong, it wasn't like a six-figure income, but it was more than I was making previously. But the business had some issues as well. Yeah, exactly. So, but inevitably, the business had some problems. And that's the key thing to recognize when you're looking at buying business, is that no matter what the owners or anyone tells you, you are buying a bunch of problems. So you need to go in with that mindset and willingness to go in and deal with them.
So with like a consulting business, your problems would be people.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the problems this one had was actually more focused around marketing.
Okay.
So okay. This consultancy was a franchise network. It was a franchisor. So it had a small network of franchisees, which solved in part some of the problems around people because they weren't employees.
Right.
They were business owners in their own right. But there wasn't much structure in there and they were terrible at marketing themselves. And the marketing and the franchise structure I knew from my previous startups. I'm like, okay, this seems to match.
Okay. So you hit on something that I think is very important that people tend to overlook, which is when you're dealing with a small business, you're really not dealing just with the financials. You're dealing with emotions, you know, the pet project of someone they've invested in, you know, blood, sweat, and tears to make this thing happen. What is your approach to someone like your first acquisition, maybe some of your following ones, to let people know that their baby is going to be taken care of?
It's very much an approach of like an authentic approach of, I just want to understand, you know, tell me what's going on here and not just in the business. Mm-hmm. Like I would have a sense of what the financials are from a high level, but I don't really get to those until two or three more conversations down the line. Mm-hmm. Like I want to know the conversations worth having, but fundamentally I'm getting under the skin. What's really happening here? What's going on in the business? What's going on in your personal life? Why are you looking to sell now? How long have you been looking to sell? And that authentic approach of wanting to understand, it helps to form a relationship. And I've had many of these conversations where it's clear that it's not right for one of us or both of us. And so we agree to go ways, but that relationship is still intact. This is where people go wrong when they come to buying small businesses, because they very much think the approach has to be kind of like you see on the larger scale, which is it's numbers led, it's cutthroat, it's ruthless. But when you're dealing with small businesses, particularly those below sort of 2 to 3 million in annual revenue, it's the polar opposite. It's people, 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 and the people who are good people relations are the ones that do well in this.
So from there, you went on and then you bought a franchise of your son. So you had some experience looking into franchise, and so you invested in a franchise. Talk a little bit about taking over a franchise structure with 70 locations.
Yeah, so I currently own today two franchise networks in the UK. They have around 70 locations, primarily across England, Scotland, Ireland. We've got a couple in Australia and a couple in the Middle East.
And what are those? Well, in case people want to drop in and patronize them.
Yeah, absolutely. So the brands are called Talking Tots and Joe Jingles. So it's focused around children's education and specifically under fives, which has become quite a passion of mine since I've been on this acquisition journey. But those businesses, particularly Joe Jingles, was in a place where it was about to go into bankruptcy. It had this large network, but it was very poorly run and just couldn't survive. And that was a question of going in and taking some pretty quick action. And within 12 months, we managed to turn that around. Mm-hmm. Done a complete 180. And then we've spent the last 2 years actually just putting in the right foundations, the right structure to then to be able to start scaling that, which is exactly where we are right now. But that's been a very much a sort of a buy and hold type acquisition rather than a buy, turn around and sell.
So when you're evaluating something like that, that is something you're interested in the market. So for example, in our industry, right, you have somebody maybe interested, they're evaluating another photo business, for example. Now you're very interested in the under fives category. You want to be a great provider of content and services to parents with young fives. So you started looking for a business in that segment, came across this company, but they were in trouble. Mm. And what didn't put you off on the fact they were about to go bankrupt? I mean, some people would just say, hey, I'll wait for it to go bankrupt and then I'll just buy the assets and relaunch it. So what was what is it that you saw that said, hey, I can turn this thing around?
There was a number of things. So the I felt that the brand was incredibly strong, which isn't reflected on the balance sheet. I felt that there was a strong brand there. And just from the bit of research that I've done, I discovered that the customers going to the classes, to the Joe Jingles classes, they went to those classes when they were children. So now they had with like their parents, and now they had grown up and had their own children. So it's technically there was like three generations, right? Like the child, the parent, and the grandparent. And I just felt that there's something really special in that. Like it clearly has a strong brand affinity. And so I felt they we could do a lot with that. But also it was clear that the people in the business, there was so much toxicity, and that was largely driving the underperformance there. And what it needed more than anything else was a bit of fresh blood, someone who would go in with some energy, get people like together again and focused on moving together collectively, which I guess, I suppose it just played to our skill sets.
Now, in that case, was that the founders you bought it from, or maybe the next generation? What was the life stage of that company at that time?
So that company, when I bought it, it was just over 25 years old, and I acquired it 100% of the business off the founder. But this was the crux of the problem with it. The founder had been out of the business for 10 years, and they had a general manager running this.
That's kind of what I was getting at.
Yeah. So the general manager and the founder had, over that period, fallen out to the degree when we were looking at it from a due diligence perspective. I mean, they weren't telling us, but you could feel it, like you could feel it. And so I was hearing stories from both sides, and I didn't know who to believe. Mm-hmm. So kind of went and thinking it could be one or the other. And it's probably more the general manager who was causing more of the issues.
Was there a value to reestablishing a relationship with the founder to get that person's perspective, since they kind of built it and launched it? Or do you just say, hey, listen, clean slate, I'm going from here?
So with every deal that I've done, I've always made a very conscious effort to maintain that relationship with the founder, the person I bought it from. And the way I do that, because I'm often asked, well, when you buy a business, do you keep the owner in, like give him a small part of the business and keep him in and they can run the day to day? And I always answer very quickly, no. Like I like to get them out, but then I like to offer them a consultancy agreement whereby for any work that they do post acquisition, they'll be paid a fee. But what really tends to happen is I spend a lot of time, you know, going for a coffee, going for a meal over the period of months, because so much knowledge and so much of the value that you've acquired is tied up in their minds. And they can't, of course, you know, get it all down on paper, like 25 years worth of history, right, and do it as part of the handover. And so when the sale is out the way, you tend to find that they tend to be a lot more open as well. So once we signed the paperwork, it was like the week after, the owner was saying, actually, these are some of the issues that we've had. And the truth started to
leak out.
The truth started to come out. Yeah.
All the due diligence in the world wouldn't help with that, I don't think.
It really wouldn't. No, it really wouldn't. So.
So the knowledge transfer thing, I think, is something that is very interesting, because in our industry, you know, there's a lot of people who've owned their business for 30, 40 years. And a lot of it is built into the owner's head or the owner's family's head. When you're buying a business, I mean, you kind of have to figure out how you're going to extract that. What are things you might look for in that situation where, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's just stuff they do because they've always either done them that way, but it works. And if you want it to ongoing, but not have these people involved, how would you kind of get that information out?
Well, that's, I think it's a fantastic question, and you've hit the nail on the head there. Like, that's the money question, because this also can be seen from the other side. The what I would love to see if I'm looking at a business more than anything else is to go in to meet the owners, to see some of the team, and then for the owners to turn around, put down on the desk a massive folder or box of folders and say, this is all the knowledge that's been documented. So these are our processes. Mm-hmm. This is what's happened here. And we have like a CRM with customers. So every conversation with a customer has been noted on there. So you can go back. That would be like the dream in many ways. And it would also be the dream for the seller, because if they had that, then they would be getting premium valuation for their business. Mm-hmm. And it would be a deal that I would have thought would largely be cash up front, like maybe not all of it, but the majority mm-hmm. of it. However, that doesn't happen. And that's one of the reasons why it's, as a buyer, I structure the deals in the way that I do now, which is I spend a lot of time helping the owners to understand just how risky this is, because all the knowledge is in their heads.
Right.
Because if they have a team of 10 people and two people leave, that's 20% of the workforce. Because when you buy a business, it's not like buying property where you have bricks and mortar. You're essentially buying contracts and people, but you can't buy people. You can't own people. They're free to do their, you know, they have their own free will, and vice versa with contracts. Most of them aren't worth the paper they're written on if they have them in the first place. And so it's very hard to extract that value up front. The only thing you can do is protect yourself from the way you structure the deal and then maintain that relationship with the seller post-acquisition to bring the value out as and when like needed.
So why should you never buy a business that is for sale?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Photo retailers, energize your sales with ShareMe Chat, the proven texting platform. Using chat to text on your website keeps your customers connected and buying. See us at Pro and IPI to find out why dealers using ShareMe Chat close more sales without adding staff. Find out more at shareme.chat.
Yes, so the hardest thing about buying a business, and also the hardest thing about selling a business, they're the two, like they're both, from both perspectives, it's the same problem, is that it's very hard to agree how much the business is worth. I believe it's Harvard Business School has 127 different ways of valuing a business, and it's more of an art than a science to many, like in many respects. And ultimately, it comes down to what someone's worth to pay for it and what someone's worth to sell for it. But the problem is that when a business owner has made up their mind that they are going to sell their business, they often think it's worth a lot more than it is. Mm-hmm. Like I've yet to have a conversation. I've had hundreds of these conversations now, and I've yet to have a conversation where an owner has come to the table and said, actually, this is what I think it's worth. And it, to be fair. What that does is it sets an expectation in their mind. And then you're coming in as a buyer, looking at the numbers and saying, well, the value is being based off the finances primarily. I know you spent 30 years building this, but I'm not buying the 30 years of you building it. I'm buying what's here today. And so there's
and potentially what's down the road too.
Yeah, but even with the potential down the road, like that is all, that's all very well saying that. And owners would always say, you know, this is the potential, but what business doesn't have potential? And actually the hard work, as we know, as business owners, is not so much having the potential, it's bringing the potential out. That's the hard part. Right. So you don't want, as a buyer, you don't want to be paying too much for all of the hard work you're going to have to do to bring out the
right
potential. Like that, you definitely take a part of it as consideration, but fundamentally that you have this gap between what the business is actually worth and what the seller is normally looking for. Now, this is the real, like the real heart of the problem, is that very often the, let's say someone has a figure of $1 million in their mind. This is what I want for my business, $1 million. Well, quite often they've mentally spent that before they've even had a conversation with a buyer. So they've paid off their property, they've gone on the world cruise, they've done this. And so when the numbers start coming in lower than that, like the first thing is, well, I can't go on the cruise now, or I can't do this. And so
right, exactly.
That's funny, but it really happens. It's remarkable.
I hadn't really thought about that, but you're right. I mean, they've you know, like you said, they're thinking about their next stage, and they've already pre-bought the car. They've done all the stuff right in their head, and now you're telling them they won't be able to do that. So,
yeah, exactly. And it creates this this dynamic, which you're not going in there trying to do that. You're just going in trying to put together like a win-win deal, because that's the only way these work in my experience.
So you're saying if you want to put in the win-win deal, you're already kind of starting from an awkward position, because they already have an inflated view, in your view as the buyer, an inflated view of what the business should be, what the sale price should be.
Correct. If the business is already for sale. However, if the owner hasn't come to that decision yet, then there's still a large element of they are open-minded enough to be able to have these conversations without creating that conflict. It makes it far easier for them to sell the business, and equally far easier for a deal but to actually happen, like the right deal to happen.
So how do you find people who are, I mean, do you just walk up to somebody and go, hey, that's a nice business you've got there, you know, would it be nice if I bought it from you? You know what I mean? What is your approach to, you know, because I know people who have bought businesses who have just said, hey, listen, I'm a customer of this business, and I know the owner is kind of looking to sell, so I just kind of pitch him and they work out a deal. You know, there's all kinds of ways to do that. So what are your kind of tips for identifying a potential acquisition?
So the best starting place with this is, and again, you've touched on it with an owner, you know, they might be looking to sell or thinking of selling, is asking yourself, well, who are the business owners who might be thinking of selling? Not likely to be someone who is maybe 5 years into their business journey and are still busy building. It's more likely to be someone who's 15, 20, 25 plus years into their journey, and who are more thinking about either retirement or thinking about, I've still got 10 years left of my working life, I want to do something different. So with that in mind, people who are, like sort of heading up more towards like retirement or that sort of phase of life are normally a good starting point, purely because you're more likely to have those type of conversations. When I first started, it was a very proactive approach. So I'd be looking at the sectors, identifying the businesses of that sort of age, like sort of 20 years, like established 20 years, et cetera, plus. And then I would simply just work some numbers. And it was remarkable how many people came back and started having a conversation, because the realization is that there's not a queue of people buying up. There's not a queue of people looking to buy small businesses. There's far more people looking to sell them than to buy them. And so it puts the owner in a slightly difficult situation, especially if their 20-year plan has been to sell the business, and that's their retirement fund. But if you can't sell it, it's obviously a big hole in the plan.
Right. And actually, I know many people in the photography industry, particularly camera store type folks, who kind of got in that position where they basically sold the contents of their store for inventory, and they shut the door because they didn't really have an exit plan and a way to make it. But they just assumed somebody wouldn't do it. They were in that position. So, but you do this thing with no money to start. How on earth, you know, I mean, that's a pretty, I wouldn't think of buying something with no money. So how did you do that? I mean, what is your background to say, okay, you know, I don't have a deep pockets to buy some. I don't have a great financial reserve to tap into. What is the skill there people need?
Well, my background was simply I have 12 failed startups. I literally don't have the finance to do it. But I think I just want to define no money, because I think a lot of people get confused here. When they say, oh, I bought a business for a dollar or a pound or euro, whatever the currency, it's often perceived as you've paid $1 for the business. But that's not necessarily the case. I mean, a lot of my acquisitions, I paid hundreds and hundreds of thousands for the business. I've just structured the deal so that on day one, minimal amount has gone in. And in terms of the skill to be able to do that, it is this being human. It's having an open conversation with someone, as simple as it sounds, is having an open conversation with someone and saying, look, where are you at? Why is this? And trying to align, like marry sort of your aspirations and their aspirations to go on and do something different in a way that both makes it makes sense to both of you. Because if it doesn't make sense for one party, then the acquisition or the deal, the sale won't happen. So it's just being human.
So how many, you mentioned, you kind of alluded this to earlier, how many conversations do you have to have? What's the ratio to conversations to sale? It's like 100 to 1 or 200 to one or?
Yeah, it's a great question. So when I first started, it was probably closer to, I want to say, probably about 70, 75 conversations to get my first acquisition. But something sort of happens quite early into your journey if you're looking to acquire more of these, is that once you've bought your first business, then you're not someone looking to buy a business. You're someone who has bought a business. And so you have a lot more credibility. Mm-hmm. And in the sector, particularly if you're looking at acquiring in the same sector, like people do talk. And so so Joe Jingles, they approached me because they heard I bought Talking Tots, the other franchise network. And so quite like at the moment, I find my ratio is probably about 1 in 5 in terms of businesses, but they've approached me and I'm a lot more like picky about what the acquisition has to look like in order to move forward.
Great. So Adrian, where can people go to get more information about you and what you do?
Yep. So I am very active on Instagram. I post on there several times a day, and I really try to sort of show inside my life everything from like the personal development routine I go through in the morning, but more through to inside my businesses. So inside the acquisitions that I've made. If I'm looking at an acquisition, then I like to sort of talk through my thought process. And I'm currently going through an exit process at the moment, which is a little bit early to talk about on Instagram, but in a few weeks, I should be able to start sharing some more on that. So my Instagram handle is Adrian J. Knight. That's Knight with a K. And I love speaking with people. So if anyone has any questions, like please message and I'll come straight back to you.
Great, Adrian. Well, listen, it was great meeting you, and you've had some great information, and I hope to catch up with you later on.
Thank you, Gary. It's been absolutely great.
Thank you for listening to the Dead Pixel Society podcast. Read more great stories and sign up for the newsletter at www.thedeadpixelssociety.com.